Vaping. Why is it so popular and how harmful is it? Public health officials and educators say the rise in vaping has come on really quickly. In the past couple years, e-cigarettes have gone from pretty rare to ubiquitous, especially among teenagers. A 2017 study by the CDC estimates that 15% of Maine teenagers vape. But ask a teenager about those numbers, and he or she may tell you the numbers are a lot higher than that. Many teenagers believe vaping is safer than smoking cigarettes. But e-cigarettes contain high levels of nicotine, formaldehyde, and other chemicals. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we'll learn more about e-cigarettes, how they work, who they're marketed to, and what schools are doing to try and curb their use. We'll also discuss whether they work as a smoking cessation tool. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. You may have seen someone vape, but not even realized what they were doing, and you might not even have smelled it. Vaping, or smoking e-cigarettes, doesn't really look or smell like conventional cigarettes, but it does have certain similarities. We're going to learn more about the growing number of Mainers who are vaping and what that may be doing to their health. Joining me in our studio, Lance Boucher. Am I pronouncing that right?
It's Bushy, but
Bushy, okay. He's director of policy for the American Lung Association in Maine. Claudine Emerson is a clinical social worker at Gorham High School. And Dr. Colby Wyatt is a pediatric pulmonologist at Maine Medical Center. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you concerned that your teenager might be vaping? Have you tried vaping to help you stop smoking cigarettes? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Lance, I'm going to start with you. Explain to us what vaping is.
Well, vaping is a terminology of using e-cigarettes, essentially, electronic nicotine delivery systems. There's many different types of them, numbers of flavors that you can get the liquid nicotine in. And it is important to realize that these are tobacco products. It's using of a tobacco product that's currently needs more regulation by the FDA.
And they can be really small, right? This isn't something somebody necessarily is holding in their fingers like a cigarette and taking a puff from.
They can look like cigalikes. There are some brands, but the most popular one is a very small concealable device called the Juul, which could be enclosed in the palm of your hand and not be detected by parents, teachers, people you're around.
Claudine, how quickly has this emerged and grown and sort of taken over high school culture?
Well, for us, it's certainly been a sudden increase at the high school, grades 9 through 12. Both males and females. And like Lance said, the Juul is probably the most popular one where it can be easily concealed in someone's sleeve or in someone's pocket. And so we have certainly seen an increase this year.
I saw that the CDC numbers are that 15% of Maine high school students admit to having tried vaping. I have a 16-year-old. She puts the number at more like 90%.
You know, that's the feedback that I'm getting from the students. I have a 15-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old daughter, both in the Gorham School District as well. And I'm hearing from a lot of students, it's pretty rampant. And they are doing it in school and out of school. Any opportunity that they have, they're taking it.
All right. Colby, how bad is it for you?
The vaping and the side effects we see from it? It's hard to know. A lot of kids aren't forthright, especially teenagers, when they're coming into our office with breathing problems or worsening asthma, about what they're actually inhaling. Even if you ask parents to leave the room, you're not sure. I can say from my personal experience as inpatient, I've taken care of one child who the only exposure they had that we could discern was new onset vaping. That they got the device for their 15th birthday, and they ended up in the ICU for a week with hypoxia. No signs of infection. I had another child who had excellent asthma control until they started vaping, and then the asthma control went away. And then once we figured out that was what was going on, we got them to stop vaping, and they could get their asthma back under control.
Claudine, do teenagers think this isn't bad for them?
That's correct. They don't think it's bad. I mean, when they compare it to cigarettes and the 4,000 ingredients that they know they're in cigarettes, and the carcinogens that they have studied in health classes, when they compare that to what research we have today on vaping, they consider it more of a curious or a thrill-seeking activity rather than something that could be potentially dangerous.
Lance, why is it so popular among teenagers?
Well, a lot of it is marketing. A lot of it's the cool thing to do, marketing. We have been unsuccessful in the past couple of years with tobacco control funding and increase in prevention funding in our state government. Unfortunately, we had a substantial budget cut, which eliminated the counter-marketing program. And these, you see ads on YouTube and Spotify and social media places where kids are. You see these products are very well advertised.
So tell me about these ads. I suspect they're in the kind of places on social media where the kids are going and the parents are not going. So when the industry tells us, no, 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 they're not marketed to kids, push back on that a little bit. Tell me how you know they're being marketed to teenagers.
Well, I mean, we've seen examples of the ads. My Facebook feed doesn't get these ads on the side, but my nieces, who's a senior in high school, she sees device ads or links to YouTube videos of people having vaping cloud competitions or things that are more appealing towards youth and not a 40 or 50-year-old adult.
So are they, videos of Leonardo DiCaprio vaping? Are they kids at a concert?
It's cool things to do. Young kids partying. The YouTube videos are full of the vape competitions, who can get the biggest cloud, loud music, lights. I mean, just things that are appealing, flashy. Very reminiscent of what the tobacco industry and combustible cigarettes are doing for advertising.
Cody, I know that I've read that e-cigarettes were developed 20 years ago or even longer as a smoking cessation tool. Have they been successful in that? Do people use e-cigarettes to break themselves of the habit of smoking old-fashioned cigarettes?
Well, I think a lot of that comes from the adult side. So I don't have any patients who've quit smoking using e-cigarettes, but that's not the population I tend to take care of.
I see.
However, there have been several studies about the smoking cessation, the use of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation, and I think the data is sort of mixed. So there was a randomized controlled trial out of New Zealand that demonstrated that there was no difference in the use of patches or e-cigarettes in the success of smoking cessation. There was a study out of Italy of 300 patients that demonstrated that e-cigarettes were no more successful in helping smoking cessation. I think it's sort of one of the thoughts, and I've had some parents who anecdotally have had some success reducing the amount of cigarettes they're smoking by using e-cigarettes, but I don't, the data on it's mixed.
What do we know about what's in an e-cigarette? What are we ingesting if we use one?
That's a great question. So it depends on which form of e-cigarette you use. There are three basic ingredients to e-cigarettes. There's the carrier, which is propylene glycol or vegetable glycerin. There is nicotine, and usually there's some flavor, and the flavors can vary. And each of those have their own health effects. So if you started with propylene glycol, when you heat that, it produces known carcinogens and active oxygen species that you're inhaling directly into your lungs. Some of the flavorings that are used are known to cause health effects in food workers, and actually the exposure of food workers is limited to them because of the known health effects from them. And then nicotine itself has many health effects, and there's no difference between obtaining nicotine from an e-cigarette or a regular cigarette. And those health effects can vary from causing problems with elastin expression, which can lead to emphysema. That can cause cardiovascular changes, so increased heart rate, increased blood pressure, decreased cardiac blood flow. So if you're prone to having heart attacks, that's one of the mechanisms that's thought to cause heart attacks. Nicotine also has effects on fetal development. If you're getting into sort of maternal smoking versus maternal e-cigarette use, nicotine can have an effect on fetal growth, on fetal lung development.
So, Lance, why is it possible that something is on the market that is full of known carcinogens and being marketed for people to ingest?
Well, the FDA has the authority to regulate these products, and they did put out a demon regulation, demon rule. However, they've now delayed their critical review of the ingredients and potential harms for another 4 years. So we'll have these products on the market and unregulated. with unknown chemicals that are, or some known and some unknown, being inhaled into your lungs and causing health risks.
There have been numerous efforts in Congress to regulate them. Have they just all failed?
Well, Congress did give FDA the authority to regulate them, and now it's in the administrative process. And with FDA delaying the demon regulation, delay in implementation, they're kind of just in an unregulated space right now.
Was a reason given for the delay?
No.
So we need to wait another 4 years before the FDA looks at what's in e-cigarettes. Meantime, more and more teenagers are smoking them.
During that time period, the products will stay on the market. You'll see the continued explosion of Juul and other devices, the next generation, and continued exposure and risk to our kids.
All right. Claudine, I suspect that vaping is not allowed at Gorham High School. What does the high school do if a child is caught vaping?
So we've done a number of things. Because there's been a sudden increase this year, we've had to adapt our procedures to vaping because it doesn't fall under the drug and alcohol policy nor the tobacco policy. And so when a kid is caught, they're usually brought down to the office. Parents are called, a referral to the SRO, our student resource officer, and then we take it from there. Sometimes they're referred to me if they think that there is vaping and maybe untreated mental health issues. But our first line of defense is really with parents. And so back a few months ago, Brian Jandra, our principal, sent out information to the parents from the CDC as well as from Opportunity Alliance, which had some great talking tips for parents. And now we're on a three-prong approach where we're really talking with faculty, students, and parents. Next week we have a parent forum that we are having at the high school. And we're hoping to have a lot of people there. We'll be going through all the devices, talking about the harmful effects, and then specifically with talking points, how to talk to your kid about it. And so we already did our faculty presentation, and we're also opening up next week students to come down and talk about it.
So do many parents not have any idea their child is vaping, have no idea what an e-cigarette looks like? It could be sitting on the dresser in their kid's bedroom and they wouldn't know what it is.
Right. So we go through all of that when we have the devices on the table and we show parents it looks like a flash drive and this is how it hooks onto the computer. And if there's a USB cord, it could be easily tucked into the backpack.
Why does one have a USB cord on their e-cigarette?
To recharge it.
Oh, my.
So they could actually have their laptop in school or at home and have the USB cord.
Their school-issued laptop. Yeah.
Yes. And then the device could be in their backpack. So that's something that we definitely want to talk with parents about.
Are you training teachers to walk up and down aisles in their classrooms looking for e-cigarettes?
So when I did the faculty presentation, absolutely. And I gave three talking points for the faculty. One, tell the students that we know it's happening in the school, that we know it's happening in the hallway, in the bathroom, and in the parking lots, and in the classroom. Tell them that we understand that. Number two, tell them and remind them that nicotine is addictive. Please let them know it's the same thing, like Dr. Wyatt said, that's in cigarettes. And then number three, tell them about the metal toxins. That's the research that we're starting to see more and more. We're starting to see evidence of lead and nickel and tin in the e-cigarettes. And so after the presentation, we have advisories throughout the week. And many teachers took that opportunity to talk to their advisory. And they were floored about how the students really wanted to talk about it, how they had opinions about what's going on in the school, how kids are getting. I mean, that's the other question. You have to be 18 to buy this. And it's in the hands of many kids that are under the age of 18 and middle school kids as well. So great conversation.
And it's expensive, right?
So a starter pack is about $60, $50 to $60. It comes with a Juul and four pods. It does get tricky because a pod only lasts about 2 days. So after a week, the student doesn't have any pods left, so they got to find either money for new pods or they got to find e-juice to fill up those pods. So it can get very expensive.
The idea that you use the phrase e-juice, and I want to ask you about this, Lance, the word juice, there's also a big craze in things like smoothies and pressed juice. Is the idea that the marketing would make it sound as though it's something healthy?
Exactly. I mean, and that's, we use liquid nicotine a lot of times just to emphasize that it is nicotine. But the terminologies of vape and e-juice does give it a feeling that it is safer. And the market inside, we have seen there is a e-juice that comes and looks like your kid's juice box that you put in the lunchbox, the little apple plastic square. So they are using that terminology to give the impression that it's safer and not as harmful as combustible cigarettes.
Colby, what's your biggest concern?
My biggest concern is the unknown and also the potential to create new smokers. So from a pediatric standpoint, you know, the kids aren't adults, and kids are using these in larger and larger numbers. We know, and the industry knows, that most lifelong smokers started smoking before the age of 18. The adolescent brain is more prone to nicotine addiction, and if there's a higher rate of using e-cigarettes in kids, which there has been, then there's going to be a higher rate of adult smokers, in theory. That theory is also based on a little bit of fact. I mean, they've done some studies on the progression of smoking or using e-cigarettes to using tobacco cigarettes, and the numbers are shocking. So they looked at never smokers and broke them down into e-cigarette users and non-e-cigarette users. And the proportion of kids who were using, and when I say kids, I mean they were 12 to 18-year-olds. The proportion of 12 to 18-year-olds that were progressed to using actual tobacco to smoke was about 9% versus 19% of the e-cigarette users. And that was a study published in Pediatrics in 2018. Mm. So that's concerning from a long-term health standpoint. It's also concerning just from a sort of acute standpoint in kids as far as the reasons they choose to use e-cigarettes and what that might mean. You know, the amount in 1 joule is a pack of cigarettes. The amount of nicotine in 1 joule is a pack of cigarettes.
So the amount in 1 joule is a pack of cigarettes.
Yes.
How long, what is the dosing? Is a joule something that you would inhale in one sitting, in 10 sittings?
So you get a certain amount out of each puff, and it depends on how much you use it. So I'm sure there's a sort of limiting to how frequently you actually use nicotine. Just like if anybody's ever tried smoking or using any substance, the first time you use it, you can't use that much of it. To use a sort of pediatric-friendly thing, let's talk about caffeine. The first time you have a cup of coffee, it hits you pretty hard. And then before you know it, you're studying and drinking pots and pots of coffee, and it's not hitting you as hard. The same's for any substance. So nicotine's not any different than that. When you first use it, I'm sure when you first use it, it lasts a long time. And then you get a tolerance and use more and more and more of it.
Claudine, when are you seeing as far as age? What age are kids that you are familiar with starting this?
Well, I think at the beginning of the school year, we saw a lot of sophomores and juniors, so probably 15, 16-year-olds. From what I hear now, because I have the luxury of meeting with students and being able to talk about this, they're reporting that there are a lot of younger kids, probably freshmen, 14 and 15-year-olds. They have reported that they know that kids are using on the bus, and some of them are 8th graders, so as young as 13.
Mm. And in a lot of school districts in Maine, the middle schoolers and high schoolers share the bus.
That's right.
Mm. Well, if you'd like to join the conversation about vaping and e-cigarettes, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Lamy Wellahan Shoes, committed to reducing greenhouse gases at all their locations throughout Maine, because what's good for the environment is also good for business.
In 1994, hateful messages were spread over the radio in Rwanda. They fueled a genocide that took the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. If radio could tear people apart, could it also be used to heal? How a soap opera brought about reconciliation, this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Join us for Hidden Brain Sunday morning at 11 o'clock.
Next Head Radio Hour, listening.
So different objects sound like different things.
To the universe.
Jupiter sounds like pebbles being thrown onto a tin roof.
Listening without hearing.
I can see the actual drum skin resonate, going up and down.
Listening.
It is hard.
To each other.
But we all have the capacity to listen in this way.
Listen to the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
You can listen to the TED Radio Hour tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock or again Wednesday evening at 11 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what do we know about vaping and its effects on your health? Joining me today, Claudine Emerson, who's a clinical social worker at Gorham High School. Colby Wyatt, a pediatric pulmonologist with Maine Medical Center. And Lance Bushy, Director of Policy for the American Lung Association in Maine. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now is Gregory Conley. He runs the nonprofit American Vaping Association. Greg, thanks for the call, and tell us about your organization. Shoot, we seem to have lost Greg, but hopefully he'll call back soon. In the meantime, we'll go to Garrett, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Garrett, go ahead.
How are you guys doing today? Good?
Yes, go ahead.
I would love to chime in on what you guys are kind of talking about right now. I understand that I actually vape myself. I actually work for a vape shop in the state of Maine. And I understand that what you guys are saying is basically smaller non-sub-ohm products, meaning like mouth-to-lung products, smoking cessation products are getting into high schools or schools, or people under the age of 18 are using them. Funny statistic, in 2005, over 13% of seniors in high schools in the state of Maine smoked cigarettes. In a report in the 2015 report Health of England, which is done by the Royal College of Physicians, they happened to find that vaping was 95% safer than smoking. Now, I'm not condoning anyone under the age of 18 or legal age using a vaping product. That's not what we want. But considering that this has gone down, it could be due to vaping. It could be due to kids not smoking anymore. I know when I was 13 years old, that was the very first time I picked up a pack of cigarettes, and I didn't quit smoking until I was 25, where I found vaping. And the health benefits that I've found are significant. Now, the product that you guys are talking about, the Juul, is made by a company called Pax Labs. Pax Labs is, I believe, based out of California. And if you ever go on their website, their marketing plan is to market to people that actually smoke right now. You rarely find them in vape shops because they honestly don't market for us. They want people that smoke cigarettes. At the end of the day, my thought is this. If you're under the age of 18 and you want to smoke a pack of cigarettes, or you want to get a vaporizer for yourself, you're going to find a way to do it. I just don't think that vaping should take the hit because of it, considering that basically it's saving lives.
All right.
So I can speak a little bit to some of the English, some of the information he shared. So the English study that is 95% safer than cigarette smoking, I'm not sure that's based on any strong evidence. You know, the contents of cigarettes there are more carcinogens in cigarettes. There are higher levels of carcinogens in cigarettes. But it doesn't mean that a product that contains carcinogens, even if it's at a lower level, is safe. It may be.
I'm not saying that it's safe.
No.
I'm just saying it's a safer alternative.
So, Garrett, yeah. You're saying it's not as bad.
What I'm saying is if I have a 90-year-old woman that comes to one of my stores, she has emphysema, she can't smoke anymore, but she can't give up the habit because some people are weaker than others. I would much rather see her on a vaporizer than continue to smoke cigarettes. Is vaping safe? Absolutely not. I would never condone that. But is it safer than smoking a cigarette? Absolutely.
I see your point. Colby?
I don't think we have any evidence of that yet. You're talking about long.
If you ever want to Google the Royal College of Physicians,
the doctor you're talking to is familiar with that study, Garrett. Go ahead, Dr. Conley. Dr. Wyatt. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying. You know, I know it's hard when you start criticizing things, especially things that people make a living off. The point of it isn't that that this is a safe product, and as the caller said, it's not a safe. He wouldn't consider it a safe product. The point is that in the perception of kids, and there have been studies done that have proved this, 20% of kids think it's safe, and it's not safe, especially for kids, because of their developing brains and their risk of becoming addicted. And then we know that, depending on the study, between 20 and 40% of them will transition to true tobacco smoking.
All right, Garrett, thanks for calling in. And I guess we do now have Gregory Conley. Greg, you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, terrific. Great. Tell us about your organization.
Sure. I have been doing advocacy for vapor products for around 8 years since I quit smoking with a vapor product when I was in law school. And the AVA advocates for sensible regulation of the vapor product market with the goal of maximizing the number of adult smokers that use the products to quit.
So the AVA being the American Vaping Association, do you have a sense of how many people are like you, have used vape products to quit traditional cigarettes, and versus how many people vape for pleasure?
In the U.S., we're probably looking at between 1.5 and 3 million adults who have put down cigarettes in favor of vaping, and you're looking at a much smaller number when you're talking about adults picking it up strictly for pleasure.
All right. And what about the concerns that so many people, including those people in the studio with me, have about young people vaping? We've seen an explosion in use. What is your stand on that?
Unfortunately, what you see is activist organizations like the American Lung Association using youth usage of vapor products as a crutch to justify almost eliminating the entire market, which is what the ALA knows will happen if the FDA regulates these products as they intended to under the Obama administration.
So you're not concerned? Really, you're not concerned about the use of teenagers using vape products?
Of course, there is reason for concern. But what we have is we've seen the largest historical, never before seen decline in teen smoking in the 40-year plus history of federal surveys. And so when you have a conversation where you have phrases like full of known carcinogens being thrown around about a product that not just the Royal College, not just Public Health England, many American public health experts saying these products are far, far less dangerous than smoking. We have 213,000 adult smokers in Maine. They're not being considered in this conversation. We have a historic opportunity to completely almost eliminate the U.S. cigarette market. Citibank just put out a report this week.
So, Greg, I want to go back to something you said earlier, and you're talking about the reduction in teen smoking. Do you attribute the reduction in teen smoking to the rise of vape cigarettes? Because my understanding as a reporter in Maine in the last 24 years is that this reduction started and the decrease was precipitous before vape products came on the market. It was more education and the efforts of some of the money from the Lance, I'm going to have you step in here.
I mean, in 1997, Maine had one of the highest smoking rates in the country at around 37-39%. And then we started to see a steep decline when the Partnership for Tobacco-Free Maine was formed. That's when the tobacco settlement dollars came in. We started doing a lot of counter marketing, youth education. The Healthy Maine partnerships were robust around the state and doing intensive work in the schools on tobacco cessation. And that's when we saw our steep spike decline. And then we've really been flattened probably for the last 5-6 years. We've been in the low teens, and we have not had that remarkable decline that we had in the early 2000s when the tobacco settlement money was first came in and used.
So, Gregory, isn't it? Are you still drawing a direct line between the lowering numbers of teen smokers, the rise in teen vaping?
What you're missing is that from 2005 to 2010, teen smoking was absolutely stagnant in the United States. It would drop one percentage point, rise one percentage point, according to national surveys. Then, 2011 onward, we have seen declines in teen smoking three times faster, three times larger. That three times larger represents the largest decline in teen smoking in history. So just saying, oh, well, of course, teen smoking is always declining. That ignores that when you plot it on a graph, and we've had American public health experts do this and publish papers on it, that teen smoking has accelerated rapidly, and it happened at the time, the same time, that the Tea Party took over state-level governments, that we saw very few cigarette tax hikes, as your guest noted, that we saw very few government-funded anti-smoking campaigns. And yet, all the talk about these products being gateways, we've seen the largest declines in
teen
smoking.
Sure, sure. Here in Maine, though, was the opposite. Here in Maine, we did have a large settlement, and there was a lot of money spent. So the statistics for the nation aren't really quite as relevant as they might be for another state. Greg, I do want to appreciate you joining us today. Gregory Connolly is with the American Vaping Association. I'm going to go to Greg, who's calling from Pittsfield. Hi, Greg. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I'm a middle school health teacher, and one of the talking points that my sixth graders and seventh graders bring up is a lot of the videos on YouTube that they're watching on making clouds and making the biggest cloud. They're saying some of these products are nicotine free. And I, you know, as a health teacher, I haven't investigated the shops. I'm not an expert as far as it goes. But I would love to be able to come back and say something to them. But not sure what the deal is there.
Well, I can answer that. And I think I know Greg. I think I went to high school with him and played football with him. So I can call you later, Greg, if you need more information. But it's true. Some of them are nicotine-free. However, they're not regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. So even some of those that are nicotine-free, when they actually do the analysis, they're found to contain nicotine. There are dangers in the vape itself. You know, when you superheat the carrier, it is known to produce there are carcinogens that are produced by it. I mean, and so we're not speaking in vagaries. I know people throw out known carcinogens. It's formaldehyde, acetaldehyde, and acrolein, which is associated with cancer. And also the flavor products are not necessarily safe to breathe in. They're meant to be eaten, not breathe into your lungs. They did an interesting study where they put a camera in people's lungs after they vaped just to see what it looked like. And what they saw was a lot of redness of the lungs and what they call friable mucosa, which just means the mucosa is delicate. And that's what you see with acute lung injury from inhalation of toxic products. I don't like the word toxic because it's too general, but products that damage tissue. That was a direct visualization after vaping. And then they washed the lungs to look at, how the cells changed. And what they found were proteins upregulated that are related to decreased cell membrane transport. That just means the cells were probably damaged. They also demonstrated decreased mucus transport, the rate of mucociliary clearance. And what that means sort of in general is that if you have that, you're more prone to build up mucus in your lungs, which makes you more prone to infections and also makes you more prone to chronic coughing and with respiratory difficulties that may already exist, like asthma, more prone to wheezing and exacerbations.
All right, Greg, thanks for your call. Let's see, we're going to move on to Rhonda, who's calling from Madison. Hi, Rhonda, go ahead.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
So I'm 52 years old. I started smoking when I was like 12 or 13 years old. And I tried quitting numerous times, tried the patch, tried all those different things. I actually quit for a little while on the patch, but I always still wanted a cigarette. January 28th of 2016, I went in, I got me a vape set up, and I haven't smoked a cigarette since then. And as far as like the health issues, I was like chronically having bronchitis. I had to have an inhaler. I've gone 2 winters without being sick. I do not use my inhaler. I actually would get out of breath just walking up a set of stairs. I work out now. I can run. So for myself, not as a child, I wouldn't want a kid to vape, but this was a lifesaver for me as far as being able to go back to a normal life.
I think that's great. Congratulations on quitting. It's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Rhonda. We've got Amy calling from Durham. Hi, Amy. Go ahead.
Hi there. When my 2 sons walk through the door at night, would I be able to pick up anything by just looking at them like very acutely as a mother can do? Or would I be able to smell anything on them?
Great question, Claudine.
No, you wouldn't, Amy, unfortunately. Because vape is a liquid droplet, it evaporates very quickly. That's how kids are getting away with it in school. If they hold it in, if they hold that inhale long enough, when they breathe, when they exhale, there's no smoke, there's no cloud. As far as the scent, because I know a lot of students are getting the fruity flavors, the strawberry, the blueberry, banana, apple, that evaporates very quickly. So unlike THC, you're not going to pick up on it.
All right, Amy, good luck. We'll go to Todd calling from Penobscot. Hi, Todd, go ahead.
Hi. Just wanted to make a comment. I'm an administrator at a school in down East Maine, and speaking with my students day to day, I've noticed that two things jump out to me. First of all, the ease with which they're able to acquire the vape pens, and then the reasons why they say that they use the vape pens. The ease with which oftentimes I'll get comments to the effect that it's just so easy. It's way easier than just walking into a store and buying anything else. You can get it online, et cetera, et cetera. And then the reasons why they say they use them is, you know, to me, it sounds more of a self-medication. And, you know, so they say it relaxes them or it relieves stress. You know, so just as an observation on it, I think those are two things that definitely need to be taken into consideration as we move forward and consider how we address this issue.
I definitely agree with you, Todd. I mean, I think when it comes to substances or any kind of chemicals that have addictive properties, students start off one reason, which might be they're curious, it's thrill-seeking, it's interesting, but they continue for a very different reason. And I think that's what you're describing, is that there's some sort of reward involved. They feel relaxed. They feel at ease. And you find that with a lot of different types of drugs. And with nicotine, you find that as well.
For the ease of access, I mean, these are going to be covered under our Tobacco 21 law when that goes into effect this summer. So e-cigarettes will not be able to be purchased by someone under the age of 21 in Maine. So hopefully that will help get them out of the high schools to some extent.
What about online?
Online sales, that's one thing that is still problematic. I mean, you need to have age verification at the time of sale and the time of delivery. And there's just not...
Can someone just lie and... get them online?
Yeah.
Yes.
Todd, thanks for your call. We do have to take another quick break. Before we do so, a word about tomorrow's program. What's the story? Excuse me, that's Monday's program. We don't have a main calling on Saturday. On Monday, we're going to look at dead languages such as Latin and ancient Greek. What's their value today? Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet us or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Main Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communications systems. NorrisInc.com. And United States Air Force Airmen of Note from Washington, D.C., performing at Rockport's Strom Auditorium April 26th. Tickets at Eventbrite.com.
There's a question on the 2020 census about citizenship, and it's causing anxiety in some immigrant communities.
People are getting the message and giving the message to each other. If somebody knocks on your door, do not open the door. If somebody asks you to fill out a form, don't fill out that form.
This week on Next from the New England News Collaborative, how one city in Rhode Island brought their census numbers up in the past and how they plan to measure up this time. Please join us.
You can join us for Next coming up in about 20 minutes after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
The CIA director made a secret trip to North Korea to meet with Kim Jong-un, but President Trump says his summit with the North Korean leader isn't yet a done deal.
If I think that it's a meeting that is not going to be fruitful, we're not going to go.
Negotiating with North Korea, Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
And you can start your day with Weekend Edition tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, vaping on the rise in Maine. Joining me today, Colby Wyatt, who is a pediatric pulmonologist at Maine Medical Center. Lance Bushy is with the American Lung Association in Maine. And Claudine Emerson is with Gorham High School. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Bill writes in an email, after 40 years of smoking, the only thing that helped me quit was vaping. After failing to quit using a tobacco flavor, 3 years ago, I decided to try a strawberry flavor, and that finally allowed me to quit. I tried everything to quit, and nothing worked. The American Lung Association receives hundreds of thousands of dollars from pharmaceutical companies that make gums, patches, and other products that compete with e-cigs. They hate e-cigs because they are a competition. Lance?
Well, like the last caller and Dr. Wyatt mentioned, I mean, congratulations. And that's great. I mean, for an individual to give up combustible cigarettes and that lifelong addiction being delivered through combustibles. But the American Lung Association does believe that everyone who uses tobacco products can quit. And the products mentioned... are regulated by the FDA, and they are approved cessation devices. So we really think they're safe and effective methods for people to quit, and those are the products that are approved by the FDA. And individuals should talk with their doctor when they're ready to quit, and we have resources in the state to help you along that.
And are you saying that because the American Lung Association is in part sponsored by those companies?
No, I'm saying it because they are studies and they are FDA-approved cessation drugs to help you quit smoking, and products that deliver nicotine in a safe, effective way to help get people off combustible cigarettes.
Pat writes in an email, after smoking for decades, my husband quit, but he continued on nicotine gum for several years. Over time, he developed several smoking-related health problems, but we learned only after that he had severe artery blockages that were likely caused by the nicotine gum. Will nicotine use create these type of health problems for today's teens?
I hope, well, they will. Nicotine's known to cause vascular problems. I hope that with ongoing education about the dangers of nicotine in whatever form you receive it, that will reduce that. But that's one of the issues, is that people see smoking tobacco as the problem when nicotine, it is a problem, but nicotine consumption in and of itself is also a problem that carries health risks.
We'll go to Margaret calling from Orland. Hi, Margaret. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Yes. Gosh, I think from all the description going on here.
Margaret, I can't hear you anymore. Are you walking away from your phone?
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm getting confused with two different ways of talking on the phone. Okay, I'm concerned about what appears to me that the FDA is captured by the tobacco industry here. When you first started the program, there was an announcement that there was a study that was being put on hold for 4 years that sounded pretty definitive. And you asked, well, why would that be put on hold? It sounds really serious. And there wasn't a clear answer coming through, but it sure looks like the FDA doesn't want to rock the boat for the tobacco industry and say definitively. I'm concerned about these young kids. From what I've heard on your program, or at least National Public Radio previously, that this vaping very quickly becomes addictive with young kids, and it's impossible for teachers to identify these things happening in the classroom.
All right, Margaret, I'll go back to your question. Lance, can you expound on that? Why is the FDA report going to take at least 4 years?
In August of 2017, the FDA delayed for, well, it was 5 years at that time, 4 years now, so 2022, a key component of the DEMON regulations. And that we, along with the American Lung Association, along with six other national health groups, have filed suit against the FDA because of this delay. But there was no meaningful justification given. But in that time period, it does allow these products to stay on the market without product review.
Do you believe it was because of the influence of the tobacco industry?
That there was no good justification done. I mean, it was a new administration coming in, looking at a number of regulations that were put under the previous administration. So a new FDA commissioner, a new administration, and their decision to move forward.
Margaret, thanks for your call. Moving on to Pete, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Pete. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much for your program. One thing that I was wondering about listening to all this is I'm not sure, is it legal in Maine to vape in a public, inside a public building like a restaurant or a bar or something like that? Because if it is, I personally wouldn't want to be exposed, even if it was secondhand, to vapor that contains lead and formaldehyde.
Good question, Pete. Go ahead, Lance. Is it legal?
It is not legal to vape in a public place. In 2015, that took effect in Maine. That was one of the one successful tobacco control measures we have had in this past couple of years to include e-cigarettes in our indoor public places smoking law.
And Colby, what do we know about the effect of secondhand vape? It's not secondhand smoke. What would you call it?
I think the problem is it's not a name for it. But there is known. So that was one of the questions at the beginning of vaping versus tobacco. people know that secondhand tobacco smoke's bad for you. So there were actually two studies, one in 2013 and one in 2014, done on secondhand vape. One was done on exhaled vapor directly from people who had taken a vape in and breathed it out. And what they found there were two different carcinogens and nicotine that was available. They also found they did a study on air quality in a room. So not directly inhaling into a monitor, but just measuring the air quality in a room with people who are vaping. And there were also increased particulates, including nicotine and a known carcinogen in that. I think this is an important point to bring up because I think because people don't have the lingering smell, they think it's probably safer. But I would say if you have a child and you're using a vape product, that you know using a vape product in a closed space like a room or a car is more than likely just as troubling for that child as it would be smoking.
All right, Pete, thanks so much for your question. I have a question for you all that hasn't come up yet. Are people using these tools, these devices, for marijuana?
Well, from a high school perspective, we haven't seen that. But I have heard reports with other local high schools that, yes, they can use their vapes with THC oil in it.
Yes, there was a study done on that, too. Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll go to Jim, who's calling from Wilton. Hi, Jim, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a concerned dad and have some middle school kids. And one of my kids was using like a homemade vape fluid. So I'm kind of curious about what is the fluid in general and what do people know about and have experience with homemade vape fluids? It's hard to tell what's in them.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem is it's not regulated. And I don't know how you make a homemade one. I'd have to look at that's you gave me something to read about after this. But I would say just from a general health perspective, if you breathe something sort of heated and that contains something into your lungs aren't going to like that. They're not set up to handle that. I would say, you know, the sort of vape cloud videos and all of that have sort of glorified what people are doing with vaping as far as like making clouds, making tricks. None of that should be considered safe for children.
Jim, thanks for your call. Gregory Connolly from the American Vaping Association followed up with an email. Please note your guest is wrong to say e-cig sales online don't have any kind of verification. Since August 2016, FDA has been very aggressive about testing online e-cig retailers to see if they will sell to a minor. The vast majority of sites now use third-party age verification databases, which often require people to provide not just a credit card, but last four digits of Social Security. There is an issue with eBay sellers who are not following the law, and we support the FDA in supporting these sales. I want to ask not about online, but about just local enforcement. You know, we go into the local Cumberland Farms or other store and we see all sorts of signs about not selling alcohol to minors. Is there the same kind of enforcement for e-cigarettes? Are police departments able to keep up with this?
They do sign our checks for tobacco products. In the local store, the police department's state contracts sign our funding out to groups to do these with law enforcement agencies.
Okay. An email from Jessica. Have you seen an increase in severe anxiety and panic attacks in teens vaping? Doesn't nicotine increase the amount of caffeine or high that could exacerbate anxiety? Mix that with the coffee they drink and it could be a horrible problem.
I think for a lot of students who are smoking, who are vaping nicotine, they do feel a little bit more anxious, especially about getting to the next puff, whether they're in class or in the hallway. There's definitely a certain level of mild anxiety that they're experiencing.
All right. Thank you for your question. We'll go to Dakota calling from Bangor. Dakota, we're short on time, so if you could be quick, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll be quick. I just wanted to say, because you guys just mentioned the thing about anxiety disorder and panic attacks. I just wanted to say, you know, I suffer from severe anxiety with severe panic attack disorder. Like, it's absolutely atrocious with how bad mine get. And, you know, since I picked up vaping, it's helped tremendously. Actually, I've gone from having, you know, four or five panic attacks a day to having them once, maybe twice a month.
Why don't we respond to that, Colby?
Yeah.
You know, this is the reason people used to smoke, is to reduce anxiety.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot of reason people still smoke, is to treat themselves for a level of anxiety. I'd say there are other modes of treating anxiety. You know, nicotine has known health effects, and if you're taking something in your body, it's good if it reduces your anxiety, but you're going to have long-term health effects from it as long as you know. If you're an adult making that decision, that's a decision you're making as long as you're well-informed. The problem with kids, and speaking from a pediatric perspective, is they don't have the full capacity. And I have teenage sons, and they don't like it when I say that, but their frontal lobe isn't fully developed, and their ability to judge decisions isn't that of an adult. I love him, and he makes good decisions, but it's just what it is being a teenager.
All right.
We've all been there.
All right. Well, Dakota, you're going to be our last call. I want to thank all of our guests for being here today for this topic that really has sort of come on really hard and fast and a growing issue in Maine and across the nation. The voice you just heard, Dr. Colby Wyatt, a pediatric pulmonologist at Maine Medical Center. Also here today, Claudine Emerson, a clinical social worker at Gorham High School, and Lance Bushy, director of policy for the American Lung Association. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.